From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
The United States will withdraw from the Paris Climate Accord.
Those words from U.S. President Donald Trump last week set off a firestorm of accusations and anger across the Western media.
Thank you. But begin negotiations to re-enter either the Paris Accord or in really entirely new transaction.
Trump's rejection of the Paris Accord has been the focus of much media coverage, but the contents of the agreement itself are lost on most of the audience. This week, BlackAgendaReport.com columnist Margaret Kimberly's Freedom Rider column is entitled Climate Agreement, Smoke and Mirrors.
I don't agree with Trump that climate change is a hoax. He's in the past called it a hoax and a con job, and I certainly don't believe that. However, it's important to point out the shortcomings, and they're pretty serious about the agreement itself, which the United States and I think most countries in the world signed on to back in 2015. The agreement does not recognize the danger that the planet is already in. Lets the rich countries off the hook. So, for example, it doesn't go into effect for 5 years. So it was signed in 2015, and no one has to abide by their pledges to reduce carbon production until 2020. So it hasn't even gone into effect yet. The nations were allowed to choose the year that they would, their benchmark year, to reduce their carbon footprint. So, for example, Russia chose 1990, and that's significant because in the 90s, Russia's economy collapsed. So if you say we'll produce less carbon than we did during the time when a country was essentially in a depression, that's not saying very much. The U.S. did the same thing, picked a year when production was down and used that as their benchmark. The EU did the same thing. So we have a lot of sleight of hand with this agreement. And I also think it's important to point out how Obama, once again, we see that presentation is everything. So it's easy to point fingers at Trump and say he was killing the planet. But the U.S. Vastly increased fracking, natural gas production while Obama was president. So up until the very moment that the U.S. signed the agreement, Obama was in charge of warming the planet, essentially. The Keystone XL pipeline was a hot topic at the time, and he, right before the agreement, said that it wasn't going to be approved, but that doesn't really matter much because other shorter pipelines were approved that carried tar sands oil from Canada to the U.S. Canada's another one. Their current prime minister, he's like, I call him the Obama clone, Trudeau. He, you know, same thing, says all the right things, photogenic, young, you know, knows how to impress people. But Canadian tar sands are among the worst polluters in the planet. I mean, in the entire regions of Canada have just been devastated by that. That tar sands oil is still coming here. And he's not going to meet reduction levels that his conservative predecessor recommended. So we see with a lot of these countries, a lot of talk about the climate, about what they're doing, about climate change. So while I oppose Trump's decision, I think it's important to point out how little has been done by the U.S. and also by the rest of the world.
You know, not for nothing, you had the Kyoto Protocols from the early 90s, and finally Clinton signed the Kyoto Protocol in 98, close to the That was the middle of his second term. And Bush didn't push to get the through the Congress, and then nothing happened under Obama either. In other words, Obama did not pick up the Kyoto Protocol and say, you know, let's boogie with this. So, right. You know, this agreement that has been reached, and it's an interesting, you know, I come out of a background where agreement means something very specific in the law and in practice. And this isn't really an agreement, you know, with the usual terms or with the elements. For example, consideration. If I agree to do something with you, like I'll give you something in exchange for something you're going to give me or do for me or whatever, whether it's an act that I'll commit. In other words, I hand you something in consideration of your doing this other thing. It's a transaction, two-way transaction, mm-hmm. Meaning it's valued. So if you don't perform, that which I gave you or, you know, alienated or hypothecated in one way or another, in other words, this thing that value that transferred from me to someplace else on behalf, you know, expecting you to do something, that's the value of what you didn't do for me. And that's where I can start basing my damages. This agreement, there's no consideration other than the U.S. kicking $3 billion into a fund that's going to kind of get just distributed by some folks we don't know to other folks we don't know for reasons we really don't have to specify yet, but just give us the money. There's no specific obligations placed on anyone except to agree to limit their emissions to some, you know, something less than this chosen frozen moment. And there's no way of enforcing the agreement against any of the parties. And there, of course, since there's no enforcement provision, there are no damages or punitive measures for noncompliance. So in other words, it's not really an agreement. That's the point.
Yeah, it's non-binding. There's no enforcement mechanism. If the United States, well, now Trump says we're not even going to try to live up to it. But if had the United States stayed in, there would be no way for the rest of the world to punish us for failing to comply with what the U.S. said it was going to do. So so these are all their pledges without any teeth. And actually, and I forgot to mention, the agreement actually allows world temperatures to go up 1.5 degrees C, which right. seems like a tiny bit, but that's the difference between the ice caps melting and not melting.
Right.
That's still pretty huge. So the agreement actually allows world temperatures to rise. And there's no teeth. It actually lets temperatures rise. And I think it's important to say this because it's a combination of denial about the seriousness of the situation that the world climate is in, and this feeling of I think just helplessness on the part of people all over the world. So, you know, they sign an agreement. Everybody wants to breathe the sigh of relief, but there's still no reason to exhale here.
Right. Keep the hot air to yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting how the media work once again so closely with the elites and defend them and protect them and hail this as a great thing instead of telling us the truth about what it does and what it does not do. And it's especially easy if it's Trump. It's easy to say, oh, my God, isn't this horrible? Isn't this the worst thing ever? Without telling people, it hasn't even gone to an effect yet because they gave themselves this get out of jail free card to keep polluting until 2020.
Right.
So it hadn't even started. And the provisions were something that most businesses can live with. I'm sure that's why it was constructed the way it was. So when, you know, Trump says it's going to be bad for business, that's not true. They can live with it. And, you know, most big industries in the United States have been you know, doing what they can to change the way they get energy. So, you know, you hadn't heard a lot of complaining from them anyway, because they knew that it didn't amount to very much.
Right.
So once again, we see where if you present yourself properly, you can get away with anything. But, you know, Trump, he misquoted, I believe it was an MIT study,
right,
and talked about, you know, a half a degree change. Well, that's still a lot. And saying that that U.S. businesses would be disadvantaged and it's going to help the worker. And he, you know, it's interesting. He expresses this concern for American workers and about jobs, but without, it seems, any understandings of where jobs are. He, in his comments, he mentioned Youngstown, Ohio. He says, I don't care about Paris. I care more about Youngstown and Pittsburgh. And, you know, Pittsburgh is not the Pittsburgh of our memory, with a lot of coal-fired steel plants anyway. Neither is Youngstown, Ohio. So it's interesting how what he understands and how the media presents him without ever really giving a good analysis of the situation.
Or really any facts. I mean, you know,
yes,
you're looking at, for example, you know, Trump is talking about jobs, and that's connected to the political, you know, whatever that he made, the promises he made as a, you know, when he was campaigning and pitching at the desperation of people who've been, you know, losing their jobs for 30, 40 years. And so, you know, that happens without, of course, any economists standing next to him and pointing to real facts and data or whatever. And, you know, not for nothing, if he brought them out, that would be the first time most people had seen them, because no one else has done that either. Obama,
right.
Bush, Clinton, you know, Bush, Reagan, mm-hmm. I don't know how far back you want to go, George Washington. But you also have, as you just pointed out, this, it's like all in the presentation. It's the same thing with Obama and or Clinton and the Democrats generally, the way they portray imperialist wars that they conduct as, you know, our right to protect, or, you know, we're protecting human rights, etc., as opposed to the Republicans, which, you know, are generally more naked in the way they present it. Well, you know, we're going in there. It's wink, wink, nod, nod, weapons of mass destruction. We're going to get the oil, you know?
And, yeah.
So, you know, here we have Obama, 8 years, there's a pending agreement that they could have ratified, picked up at the beginning and said, hey, let's grab this and really fix this and make this thing happen. We got 8 years ahead of us. And instead, in the last year or so, what he does is say to people, while the whole world is organized to deal with this crisis that everyone has finally acknowledged exists, with the weather raging the way it had for around that time, to say wink, wink, nod, nod to the oil companies and the other people that fund both parties, I'm going to put this off for at least 5 years. Watch. And
yeah.
Trump says, well, this thing that's not going to happen for 5 years, that's not enforceable and doesn't really have any promises except that it's going to let the global temperatures go up 2.7 degrees Fahrenheit, because that's what 1.5 degrees centigrade is, you know, which puts a lot of pieces of land and ice over thresholds, as you pointed out. We're not going to do it then either. You know what? We weren't going to. I'm just telling you, we ain't doing it, so we can do some other planning. And there's jobs and jobs, jobs, jobs. You know, that's really what just happened. And the society is like lining up as if that question being discussed between them instead of the real question of climate change is what our fate is going to hinge on.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, it's times like this, I wish that, I don't know, I wish Trump were smarter. I mean, he would really have an opportunity if he were honest, if he told people about the provisions of this agreement and told people how little it accomplishes, instead of, you know, appealing to the worst part of the Republican base, he could actually accomplish something. But, you know, that's not where we are. So we get this, you know, we get the usual from him, the worst elements of the Republican Party, that it's climate change is just a hoax and it's all to disadvantage us versus, you know, China or India, instead of being honest with people about where we are. And also, you know, it's interesting, Trump has only been president since January.
Right, for like so whatever, January 20th, whatever okay, not even January 1st, January 20th, so the end
yes,
of January.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So whatever condition the climate is in, whatever the state of the world's environment, you can't blame him. Obama had 8 years to accomplish something. Bush had 8 years. The leaders of the EU and China and other countries all have had years to address this problem. But it's a bigger issue where about capitalism, about who the big polluters are. The big polluters are industries and the military. Those are the big polluters on the planet. They are the cause of most fossil fuel production, and you'd have to fight capitalism itself in order to really have any impact on climate change. And there's no stomach for that. So that is why we get a lot of talk and we don't get action. And so we have the worst elements in the world are controlling this issue. So it raises much bigger questions about who has power in the world, who really runs things. And so we have these presidents or prime ministers who may make promises, but they don't really run things either. So you don't get to be president, as we've, you know, discussed many times. You only get to be president because you promise the people who do the polluting that you're not going to make life hard for them. So so all we're going to get is smoke and mirrors. All we're going to get are phony agreements like the one that was produced in Paris in 2015. And this would be an opportunity for the corporate media, but they are the corporate media, so right. They're not going to do it either, to tell people the truth about the seriousness of our condition and the shortcomings of agreements like this one.
Yeah, I mean, these are basically the mouthpieces, the communications end of the very interests that are getting rich burning stuff and heating up the air. That's basically it. You know,
exactly.
I had a creative writing teacher in high school named Al Clementi, and if I were to write a piece, like a science fiction or speculative fiction piece back in 1970 or whenever I took his class, where the most hot air out of, you know, propaganda arm, the most hot air in its history was generated over the question of the atmosphere heating up, he would, like, give me a C and say, you know, this is much too heavy-handed symbolism here. You know, what are you doing? It's like, you know, really heavy-handed saying, here's all the hot air to cover our production of hot air. But that's exactly what's happened.
Hot air to talk about the hot
air.
Yeah,
all there.
Yes,
you know.
Well, you know, it's you know, we see that how little the media do. It's like these people go to these top journalism schools and you know, they can't even tell us who, what, when, where, why, and how.
Right.
It's you know, you really have to do a lot of digging on your own to find out any information that's really useful, which is why they're always talking about fake news. They don't want us to find other sources of information, because what they're giving us is so inadequate. Well, not inadequate, but it's just not true.
Right.
You know, that's fake news to say, oh my God, it's terrible. The Paris Agreement was the only thing saving the world. That's just not true. And right. That is, it seems to me, the very definition of fake, and to lie about essentially life on the planet.
Yeah.
And how and if it will survive, and if so, for how long. So you know, we have to you know, we just have to be very careful about just accepting their word, and also, you know, condemning Trump without any real analysis. And because then you just get into this, you know, Trump evil, Obama good, and when Obama was the one who increased fossil fuel production in this country. That's why the price of oil collapsed. It still hasn't gone back to
those
levels. I think it's still like 40-some-odd dollars a barrel. It was almost 100.
Right.
I mean,
yeah, it's less
and
than
that's
half.
Because of U.S. production.
Yep. And also other actions taken by the U.S. behind the scenes at OPEC and other places. But, yep, that's right. So geared to facilitate U.S. production, by the way, among other political geopolitical goals. You know, one of the things that is the most offensive, I think, about this, and, you know, I keep trying to play with this imagery of, you know, hot air and such, but really what this fake discussion, you know, the one that fails to actually analyze climate change and its, you know, immediate causes. I mean, I'm talking about like identifying like those 32 factories there, this, you know, starting to show the actual science, the facts on the ground. This is instead displaced, that discussion, with, you know, by this fake discussion. In other words, people are looking for the discussion about the thing that they're witnessing, and mm-hmm. that discussion is pushed off of the means of communication in favor of this nonsense that comes from the corporate media, which is leased our airwaves and the cable waves and, you know, and all of that. So the real, I mean, in other words, it says affirmative an act of creating climate change as burning stuff by displacing the discussion that needs to be taking place right now publicly seeking a remedy.
Yeah, because the remedy is something that people aren't prepared to do. I mean, you're talking about revolution, actually.
Right.
I mean, when you think about it,
right.
The U.S. has the biggest military in the world. That is a major polluter. Our industries, the United States is the worst. You know, people still have this image of China being the country that's the worst, and it's the United States,
right.
And it didn't start in January 20th either.
Right.
So
right.
The remedy would be to talk about capitalism, to talk about our system, to talk about so many things that just make people uncomfortable. One and two, point them in a direction that they're not willing to go in, and you know this. Unreal political discussion that we have here where the Democrats and the Republicans are, you know, supposed to be so different when they're not. And so the difference is a Republican president. So Bush will not sign on to the Kyoto Accords.
Right.
But Obama will sign on to Copenhagen and Paris,
right.
Even though they have no teeth and they don't really accomplish anything,
right.
And in
right.
fact allow the world temperature to rise.
Right.
So people get to relax. Oh, we have a president who signed the agreement. Thank goodness. And nobody tells you what the agreement actually
right.
says.
Right.
So you can't talk about a remedy when you don't even know you have a problem. I mean,
right.
the Paris Climate Agreement itself is a problem.
Right. Right. You're at the same. And also, you know, you mentioned Copenhagen, too. And, you know, all of it. In essence, again, this is another displacement where a real agreement that's going to accomplish something like slowing down, whatever, minimizing, mitigating climate change, where that discussion should be taking place. You have these political shenanigans instead. And people wearing a badge of, you know, well, I'm protecting the climate while I'm actually enabling its, you know, damage.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's a very serious discussion. The only way to possibly, and some scientists say the damage is irreversible. I certainly hope that's not true. But in order to really reduce fossil fuel production, the world would have to talk about deindustrializing. I mean, our
right.
lives would have to change in major
ways. Yep.
And I'm not saying that's not possible, but somebody has to say it.
There's also the repurposing of the economies, essentially. That's where the resistance comes from, particularly. I mean, we have the latent resistance from a population that's like, wait a minute, I don't know how hard I want to push on this. I mean, I got to get rid of my car and my TV set and blah, blah, blah. But the people who own and or control the economies of the world realize this discussion means that the economies are going to be repurposed from lining their pockets to protecting our environment, and they wield a lot of power. They're the ones that are conducting the charades and publicizing them.
Yeah, so what we have are individuals who, you know, I'm not going to tell people not to be concerned, so we're browbeaten into recycling and, you know, don't buy bottled water. And and I'm not saying that people shouldn't do those things, but, you know, what individuals can do is has a minimal impact.
Very minimal.
And I'm not going to say I'm still going to recycle, you know, I'm not going to say not to do it. So instead of the people who are really responsible and who could really play a role in this really radical change that we need in order for the world to survive, are the ones who lie to us. And little people are the ones left with, you know, should I buy a Prius or not, or take public transportation? Not saying don't take public transportation. So that's where we are with these lies that our politicians tell us, that big business tell us, and that the corporate media help in relaying to us.
You know, and finally, I saw you this past weekend at the Left Forum. Disclosure to everyone else, and Glenn Ford and Bruce Dixon and other folks, Danny Haifong from Black Agenda Report, and many other folks. And I came back. I shot some video and took audio, as you know. And I was looking this morning through some things, and I actually found something he delivered, Glenn Ford, last year. And there was about a 10-second clip where in the middle of the campaign last year, because we're talking, it was around May or June of last year, he distilled out that one of the real offenses of Trump, and I want to apply this to the discussion we're having now, was that he distilled the white supremacist part of Republican constituency, Republican Party constituency, away from what it was bundled with, which was militarism and an economic program that benefits the, you know, the rich people that run the Republican Party as opposed to the rich people that run the Democratic Party, I guess. and so what he said was, this is the big offense for Trump. It isn't the white supremacy that those folks have a problem with. The white supremacy was the mask for the other policies that he jettisoned, and that it could just as easily have been, you know, instead of a white supremacy mask, you know, a Prius owner mask, or, you know, a Dracula mask, or any mask at all, fairy princess, whatever, it is the fact that it's masking the essential thing. He didn't say this, but it was, you know, implicit in what he said. The essential thing is that their ability to conduct empire abroad and the kind of economy that they conduct at home, masked behind, in front of this particular constituency that finds this part attractive, white supremacy. And so looking at the climate change discussion in that context, where Obama and et cetera wearing one mask, Trump, et cetera, wearing another, you have the essential questions that are the real issue.
Yes, Trump, you know, that was Trump's big sin. You know, the elites want to maintain U.S. Hegemony in the world and imperialism in the world. And for Trump to say that we could have a better relationship with Russia is heresy, because they're like, no, we have to keep having wars. We have to keep having, you know, proxy wars so far. When he condemned these trade deals, TPP, NAFTA, et cetera, they help capitalists move their capital. And for him to talk about these things, he got to the heart of what it is they want to do. And you're right, they don't care about racism. They don't care about Jeff Sessions wanting to put more black people in jail. They don't care about deportation of undocumented people. They don't care about any of that. They don't care about abortion rights. They don't care about the rest of that stuff.
Right.
Trump was messing with their money. And that was their big, and is their big problem with him. And that he can't be controlled. He's unpredictable. And he has this And that is the base of his opinion, and that is the basis of his popularity. And that is the big problem for them.
Margaret Kimberly has a weekly column at blackagendareport.com under the banner Freedom Rider. We've been discussing her column this week, Climate Agreement, Smoke and Mirrors. Margaret, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.